Carl has a quotation on his website from John Muir. When we try to pick out anything by itself, we find it hitched to everything else in the universe. And that's what astrology really is all about. For example, your natal chart, the chart for the moment of your birth, it's all about where the planets were at the time you were born. And these ancient gods have a lot to say about how your life is going to go. Indra practices Vedic astrology as well as helping people figure out just who they are by using the Enneagram. And I'm not sure how many of you know what the Enneagram is, but basically it's a personality test. And there are 9 types. And seriously, when I had mine done, I understood so much more about myself and how I operate in the world. Indra was a businessman before embarking on his current adventures, and he really wants to work with people, helping them understand not only themselves, but their lives. Now, he brings up 2 people in this episode you might not be familiar with. Babaji was a Himalayan yogi and guru to many, and Yogananda was an Indian-American Hindu monk who introduced many to meditation and Kriya Yoga. I just wanted you to be familiar with these humans before we get into this episode. We talk cycles, the vibrations of colors, because did you know that every color that you see every day is the result of different frequencies of vibration? Yes, it's true. And then I wanted to make sure that you listen to the Easter egg at the end of this episode, because Indra has a special offer for everyone listening out there. All right, and that's it. So now, let's get to my conversation with Indra Rinsler.
But when I was just starting in spirituality, I had this experience of feeling that when you walk into a room that has a lot of people in it, like a party, say, you feel energy that's more than the energy that is apparent there. You feel more. Okay. And as soon as you feel more, that Pandora's box opens, that it's all a possibility.
Introduce yourself. Who are you?
Boy, what a tough question. I've been on the spiritual path 50 years, and I don't really think of myself as a human being. And so I might very easily say to people, I'm nobody or I'm nothing, meaning not to put myself down, but to express a humility that I feel on the inside. You know, I mean, I'm an astrologer. If it's that kind of a situation, I could say that what I ended up doing that I felt that I wanted to do for decades is to be an astrologer. So I've been sharing that modality. And, I probably wouldn't get much beyond there, you know. I mean, I'm a parent, a husband, a grandfather, but I don't really think much about that. I mean, I think about them when I'm with my kids. I mean, it's not that I don't think about them, but I don't identify with them as such as presenting myself as who I am.
And I'm so curious. So. When you were growing up, did astrology already speak to you? Was it something that kind of captured your heart when you were young? Or how did that happen that you kind of got into this modality?
So I started when I first moved to California in 1970, we started going to metaphysical bookstores. We heard about natural foods that we didn't know about that before. That was like new. So we went to metaphysical bookstores and I started buying books, and that's how I started on the spiritual path. And some of those books were astrology books. I was a numbers person as a young child. Well, as a young child, and then even as an old child, I was a numbers person. But that has kind of disappeared in the last 10 years. But I started with astrology more than 50 years ago, and It's kind of something that I always wanted to do, but I didn't, I just wasn't ready, I suppose. And I didn't really hold anything about that. That was always kind of the wonder. I remember, I read people on Facebook, and I remember being 30s and 40s and 50s and doing things, but kind of wondering what was my thing and when will I find my thing? Not when, but wondering what it was. And now that I've been into it for a while, it's sort of freeing. But I remember, because I work with clients all the time who aren't, I remember being in that space of not knowing what was my thing, just waiting patiently until it was the time.
Yeah. And I recently had my chart done last year, and it's just astonishing. It is, you know, I've kind of been in and out of astrology, but I decided before anything else, I was going to get my chart done. So I got my chart done, and it is just astonishing watching how things play out in my life based on what the astrologer told me. It's actually kind of shocking. And it really kind of gave me permission to believe that there is 100% something to this. And, you know, they talk about gravity, everything's connected, gravity is important. So why wouldn't, at the moment of my birth, you know, where Saturn was or where Jupiter was, these huge giants that literally curve space and time, why wouldn't that affect me in some way going forward in my life? And I find the concept absolutely fascinating. It's utterly thrilling to think that it is so ancient. I mean, I don't think people know how ancient astrology is. It is so ancient. It was 1,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago, even before that, considered a science. How we define science today is how the ancients, I mean, I'm going to say ancients, looked at astrology as a modality so long ago. And I'm not even sure why there's so much aversion by a lot of people to incorporating it into their lives or using it as an aid, because it really is an aid for kind of understanding what's going on in your life and what's happening right now, or even what might happen, you know, during the eclipses. I mean, I swear to God, during those eclipses, my life changes in ways that are really astonishing and somewhat disturbing. I always think Joker's wild whenever the eclipse comes up, because I never know what's going to happen. But usually it, you know, whether it's a dream or an action, you know, I'll share this story. A couple years ago, night of the eclipse, my partner at the time, who I'd been with for about 7 years, was really restless. He couldn't sleep. He was just, and it was a full moon eclipse. And I thought to myself, because it was about midnight, I was lying in bed and I thought, he's going to break up with me tomorrow. I just knew it, because that energy, the eclipse, was so jarring. And it was so, I don't know, the air was already starting to shudder. That's what I use. The air just gets displaced. And the next day he came home from work and he said, I'm breaking up with you. And you know, sometimes I have incredible dreams during an eclipse that tell me things that I need to know. And I think that if people were more conscious about what astrology is and how they could use it, they could more intentionally live their life. I mean, I'm sure you feel just as deeply about that as I do.
Well, while you were talking there, I was thinking you were getting into my head. That's part of my rap. I consider that astrology was the first concept. The first concept was, we call light to dark, we'll call that a day. We'll call the light to dark moon, we'll call that a month. And cold to hot to cold is a year. And I consider it the first concept. I consider the second concept was that we can do better than nature. And we haven't really recovered from that concept yet. So yes, it is. I think people don't follow it because it's too powerful. I think because it has too much truth. And I think that it's not for everybody in that sense, that people are always needing to take power away from, if you say somebody, you know, you need to grow up, they're going to say you're a jerk. So that's what we do. You know, that's our, it's a response. It's a surviving response. People don't understand it and don't follow it. The reality is that the way that a lot of people follow astrology, I don't actually believe in that either. That we give our power away to it. That it's, you know, Pluto square. Oh my God, I'm doomed. That isn't really true either, because the planets are neither good nor bad. There's just, it's opportunity, and they just are. And it's our own limitations that bring out what they might call negative aspects of the planets, of which I don't really talk about negative aspects. Do people have challenging charts? Absolutely. You know, did they ask for that this time? Is it a setup? I believe that, you know, I kind of believe that it's a bit of a setup, because I'll tell you why, because you may even ask me. Why is because if we says to us, you need to learn to budget your money, and we say, well, no, I don't. Well, when you're 30, you're going to be in bankruptcy because you don't get the lesson the first time. So when you get the lessons easy, then the lessons are easy. But when you ignore it, when one ignores things that we need to let go in ourselves, and attitudes and ways of being and projecting and anger and hate, whatever they are, then the lesson comes harder the next time. Harder and harder and harder and harder and harder. And so that's why some people get the challenging charts that they do.
Thank you for pointing out that planets are not, I mean, I'm just going to use Saturn for an example, who's kind of, I have Saturn. When I was born, Saturn was really prominent. And Saturn is the taskmaster, or, you know, teacher, struggle, learning. And I had always really associated Saturn with, I don't know, I wouldn't say unhappiness, but just, I mean, my life has been one of struggle. It has been really challenging in parts of it, heartbreaking, exhausting. But this astrologer said Jupiter was also very prominent when I was born, and that's the planet of gifts and good luck. And so I needed to change my viewpoint on Saturn and understand that Saturn is there to teach me, to educate me, also to help me understand that I can survive. I can survive the struggle, and I can take what I've learned and hopefully use it in a better way. Jupiter is, you know, I'm being very general here, but the planet of gifts and good luck. So I guess I'm lucky, because I do have periods where it's struggle, 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 then something really great happens. And then I have struggle, 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 then something really nice happens. And it is interesting, because the planets are really here to teach us. You know, if you want to use the verbiage of light and dark side, the light, the gifts, the boons, the dark side, the quote unquote negative aspects, you know, the more difficult, challenging aspects. And I just, it's helpful for me to understand that the planets are really here. The way they're moving in the heavens is to help us grow, to help us discover more about ourselves, to help us discover more about the world and our place inside it. And to me, that's a really gorgeous thought.
Well, yes, again, it seems like you're in my head. That's kind of what I express to people. What I say about Saturn is you have to make friends with Saturn. And sometimes with Jupiter, that Jupiter is, I call it expansion. And the problem with Jupiter is that it's never ending expansion. You know, it's like Jupiter isn't like just on the weekend, you know, I mean, like Jupiter is pushing all of the time. And so that, for some people, while you talk about it as a good luck and generosity, you know, or good fortune, yes, it can be that. But the thing is that when people are wanting to take a bite-sized piece, and Jupiter says, here, take it all, that isn't so good. I mean, it's not that you are having bad luck, but it is a constant summer heat. You know, we get to a place, even if we like summer, it's like, California, we say like a cloud comes over and we go and we worship it. You know, it's like it was a cloud. It wasn't even over the sun, but at least it was a cloud. It's like big news. And so that Jupiter, the Jupiter energy for many people is just non-ending, and it becomes a difficulty. It's just too much. If some is good, then more isn't necessarily better. They're a challenge, like you say. There's high sides and low sides, and the finding the balance between them, and realizing that they're, like you say, they're here to teach us. They're here to support us, and it's our own BS in our mind that makes up a different story, you know, into good and bad and right and wrong and black and white. And those are limited. And that's the work.
I love that you said more isn't necessarily better, because I have tested it with dessert and it failed spectacularly. So
I like to say a piece of chocolate cake is a good idea, but the whole cake isn't such a good idea.
Yeah. True story. True story.
I didn't really grow up in a religious household, but the thing was, is that my parents, I was raised Jewish, and my parents were the generation of, we're not going to pass it along anymore. We're not going to pay. We're going to hold on to all of the conditioning, and we're going to take all the brunt of all the junk that we're dealing with. We're going to, for whatever reason, I never got any of it. My sister got some. She was older before the war. I was right after the war. And I kind of, as an independent ball of energy that was too much, I never got any of that. You need to and you have to. I mean, there was the religiousness was more of a moral sense of properness in terms of, I don't know, I wouldn't say that I got this, but it was like being kind to people and being sensitive to people and being truthful. Didn't get it as a teaching directly, but the idea was that you wanted to live that way. But the religiousness of it never made any sense. Beautiful on their part to be open to. Now, whether they were just too busy with their own stuff, who's to say? And it doesn't really matter. And I don't really know. But the fact was, is that I think that I was given the independence to be able to seek out my own rather than having to shed, didn't have to shed so much. And I think that that's what a blessing that was. I think that's a bit of a setup. That was my particular setup. My parents died in my early 20s, natural causes, 2 years apart. And that was gone. And I had the freedom to go in whatever direction it felt.
Thank you for that answer. And I also wanted to bring in, I don't know if you know much about me, but I grew up in Pakistan for 4 years when I was a kid. So that part of the world that you travel to is very near and dear to my heart. When you go to India, are you there to study astrology? Are you there for a pilgrimage? I mean, we don't have to talk about it if it's personal, but I'm just so curious because I do love that part of the world.
I wouldn't say either one particularly. The astrology part, I went to when I was there, I wanted to study, but I found that I spent time going to bookstores and looking for interesting books, and I found very few because I found that at the particular brand of what I call Indian astrology. I'm a Vedic astrologer, so you can say that's Indian astrology. But like, I eat American foods, but I don't eat the American diet. You understand? So I'm saying that the Indian astrology is very prediction oriented. It's very limited to things are as they are, and the kind of astrology I do is completely differently from that. But what I discovered was that I wanted to learn all the rules, and then I threw them all out. So I didn't really go there to study astrology. I went and I found out that there wasn't really what they were doing wasn't really anything that I was. I went the first time in 86 as a pilgrim on a pilgrimage, on a tour with a fellow devotees. It's more of a retreat experience for me. It's actually, the reality of it is, it's really no different. I wear the same clothes here that I do there. I'm the same person after 25 years of traveling there, almost every year, except for COVID. I'm kind of the same person there as I am here. But what I do there is I sit with teachers. I found teachers to sit with. And so I do study and I do meditation. And I've had a few courses, but not really a lot of courses. I had already lived in an ashram for 20 years before I went. So it wasn't like I was like it was a new experience. I was already on the path for 25 or 30 years before I started going for long visits in 99. And so my experience there is more of a being. It's just it's being part of it, and the being in the sense of being in the energy, sharing in the magic, if I'm going to use one of your keywords that's there, and just being in it without, not above it, not below it, but just being in it and appreciating how different it is. I like to say from there, here makes no sense. And from here, there makes no sense. And so you have to kind of just be with both. I kind of learned to be with both. It took a while. You're not asking me this, but the people that come one or two or three times and they want to learn how to, this is wonderful, but it isn't like that back home. How do I make it back home? Well, that takes a little while, and it becomes that you don't see any difference, that you don't see any difference in the people, that you don't see any difference. The people dress differently and people act differently and the food is different and the roads are different and everything is different. The prices are ridiculously different. But you get to a place in between that I'm sure you've found in your own spirituality where you stop looking at differences and the differences disappear.
Hooray for that. I actually just interviewed a woman, Reverend Bridge Feltus, and she was talking about spiritual tourists. You know, they want to go away for a weekend or maybe a week, do yoga, do meditation, and emerge from that and declare themselves healers or shamans or what have you. And I think that's really very pervasive in our society, partially because everybody's attention span is like 2 seconds long now, and everybody wants everything right away, immediately. You know, I went to seminary and it took me 5 years. I knew it was going to take me a long time, but I had the humility to understand that I needed all that learning. I needed the process. I needed the space in my life to learn all that, to take it in. I know people who have gotten an online, you know, I'm an ordained minister, and I know people who have gone online and ordered a certificate that says they're a minister. And they say, I can, you know, I'm a minister now. I can be in a church and give sermons. And I just think to myself, we're really losing the ability to fully immerse ourselves in an experience and take the time and have the patience to learn and take in and absorb and contemplate and comprehend really truly deeply the truths about this life or about something that we want to learn and have patience with the process. There's no more patience anymore. And so I really, you know, hope, I love our conversation. You've been so diligent and passionate about going to India and creating this beautiful space for yourself there to, you know, say, I love that you're so humble at the beginning, you know, nothing, or you know, to take in what is offered to you, whether it's knowledge or kindness or food or what have you. You've really created the space for that. And I'm sure that every time you go, you learn something new when you go to India. But I'm so curious, you know, I'm sure some of my listeners would love for you to tell me, how did you end up in an ashram and what does that look like?
You're talking about the ashram for 20 years? So let me just say the ashram, I read Autobiography of a Yogi. Are you familiar with the book? So I read that in 1971, and I lived in an ashram that was dedicated to Paramahansa Yogananda, the author of the book, for 20 years. in India, the area that I go to is filled with that energy of the lineage. Babaji and Yogananda was there. It's with me everywhere. How I did that was step by step. I didn't go all at once, but it became, this is interesting. And then it became, I had a friend in the San Francisco that moved there, and I visited her in 73. She moved to this community, and then I just got more stuck in it, not more stuck in it, but more attracted to it, more stuck to it, not stuck in it, but stuck to it. And then it became, it just became step by step. It became very a logical thing to do. And I think what I wanted to say before was that you're talking about that we have to go through the dark night. And the thing is, the dark night is part of it. And it's I see it as a, at my community, we used to have these cycles that I used to call centralization and decentralization. It would be, we're not feeling any control, or we don't know what you're doing, so let's centralize. And so something would move into centralization. It would be department heads, and everybody would meet, and da-da-da-da, and that would go on for a while. And then somebody else would come in, or whatever, it'd be a different time. And then we'd move to decentralization. Let's let everybody have their own autonomy, and we don't report to us every week, or whatever it is. I'm just making examples of I'm just using rough ideas about how it worked. But I notice these cycles of centralization and decentralization, and I notice them to be in life, in terms of from light to dark. And so we're on top of our game, we understand, and then we find challenges, and then we don't understand, and we go into black moods, and then we come out of it, and then we say that isn't going to work anymore. So then we get a diet, or we watch our behavior, or we take a course, we go away for a weekend and take a course, and then we get on the high side. And it's a continual flow of want to call it biorhythms. I don't know if that's still around, but biorhythms, or light to dark, like the day and night, or cold to hot, like the year, or moon disappears to brighten the sky at night. Whatever the cycle is, we go from these cycles, and so I just wait. I've learned to just wait and not get blown out about a cycle, or it isn't working, or what's happening. It's more that it's process is that's how we learn. It's kind of like, and I'll give you another example, is breath in, breath out, exact same thing.
Yeah. Since I've started meditating, it's actually really fascinating how much I pay attention to my breath now, because I wasn't before at all. It was completely something I didn't even consider. I didn't think about it. Years ago in Portland, I went to go see this shaman who did some work with me. And one of the first things he did was work with my breath, because he said, once he started working, he said, you breathe like a little bird. It's just really fast, shallow breaths. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh my gosh, I didn't even know that was a thing. And I guess you're probably right. But being conscious of how I breathe, and in starting meditation, it's interesting. When I experience a stressful event now, or something that's causing me anxiety, I just close my eyes and I breathe very deeply a few times. And that helps kind of slowly make me feel easier.
Yes, I that shallow breath that you're talking about, what it came up to me is that you weren't very present in the shallow breath. In the deeper breath, then you have more presence.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think I have been running around like a chicken with my head cut off since I was a kid, and I needed to slow down a lot. Mm-hmm. And of course, it only took me 20 years to start to meditate after that meeting with the shaman, but I'm doing it now, and I'm understanding, you know, that my breath can really get me ready for the day. So I meditate in the morning. I need to start meditating at night. It's a very subtle process that I feel like is slowly changing me from within. Plus, I have to tell you, taking a really deep breath several times it's the most delicious feeling in the entire world. My whole body feels amazing. It just it's so hard to describe, but it feels so beautiful.
Oh, that's beautiful. Yes, that's the way to live. We want to live each moment.
The gist of my podcast is this question. Have you ever witnessed or experienced something that was magical or miraculous in your life? Something that maybe helped you to see the world in a different way, helped you to understand that there was more going on in this reality behind the scenes than we actually understand? Something that changed your life? I'd love to hear whatever you have to tell me.
Okay, well, what I have to tell you, I'm going to be a little nonconformist here. I mean, it's like it's every moment, you know. I mean, it's every moment. There wasn't one event. I can't say that. I would say that the mystical experience, the near-death experience, the feeling, I haven't really had those. But the fact, what I have had is every moment feeling this incredible. In fact, you said something before that made me think of this. But when I was just starting in spirituality, I had this experience of feeling that when you walk into a room that has a lot of people in it, like a party, say, you feel energy that's more than the energy that is apparent there. You feel more, okay? And as soon as you feel more, that Pandora's box opens, that it's all a possibility, from the rising of Christ to the crucifixion to Buddha stories and Muhammad stories, they're all possible. The whole thing, anything that we read, near death, the Red Sea parting, any of it is a possibility. As soon as we think that there is more than what is apparent on the physical plane, then the whole game is that anything is opened. Everything is open for any possibility. That to me is the magic. The magic to me is each moment. To this question, I wanted to give you a word. I wanted to give you a one-word answer. And I'm sure it's a word that you're familiar with. And the word is grace. Okay? That is, when you're talking the magic, you're talking grace. And so it said that the grace is made up of 25% from us, but we have to give 100% of our 25%, 25% from Guru, which could be inner self, and 50% from God. That's the grace. Is that grace is that power, that energy, that things just are, that they just appear, that things just happen. And that is the miracle, that you think of something and then think of somebody and then they call you, or that you want a food and then it appears, or that you're looking for a solution and then it comes. And it's in each moment. It's moment to moment. It's not based on events. To me, it's not based on years. It's the minutes.
You know, it's actually a really gorgeous thought for me, because I do love science so very much. I think I read an article once where they said, you know, even inside a second, by the way that we measure time, so even inside a second of time is infinity. And that, you know, we use these delineations of hour, minute, day, to, you know, maybe get to the airplane on time or arrive at someone's dinner party on time. We need that so that we are showing up at the correct time. But really, it's an illusion how we've split all this up, how we split time up, and that within each moment that's so beautiful, it's infinity is there, because there's every possibility, every, you know. And I think that's what I love about the breathing in the breath, because it slows me down so that I can become more in touch, more in tune with the possibilities in every moment.
Beautiful. Yeah, I think I think the number that the colors vibrate at millions of times per second. And I thought about that. The difference between red and blue is that one vibrates at 400 million times per second, and the other one, or in a tenth of a second, I don't remember, but it's a phenomenal number. And then blue is maybe like 7 million times in a second. That's the difference between red and blue. When we live on that level, and that's a level that you're talking about here also, that I'm talking about and you're talking about with the breath, when you live on that level, then everything, what magical moments and what miracles do you experience them every moment of every day, that the water works, that Zoom works, that we found each other, that your calendar is the same as my calendar, and that the internet lets us connect. I mean, the whole darn thing is a miracle every day, as far as I'm concerned.
How has astrology changed your life?
Well, you talked about Saturn. There's a teaching in Vedic astrology, and that is the Mahadashas, the great periods. The Maha means great, and Dasha means period. And so each planet in this 120-year cycle has a set amount of time that is the main influence in your life. Saturn is 19 years, Venus is 20 years, Sun is 6 years, Moon is 10 years, and they have a particular order. Now, the variable is that you start in that cycle depending on where the position of your Moon when you're born. And so I was born with 2 years to go in my 20-year Venus cycle. And then I started Sun, which is the natural beginning. And so I almost have the natural order. And so I entered Saturn at 60 later in life, which is nice because Saturn is very inward and it blends well with later in life. And so I've had 18 years now of 19 years in Saturn. And as I say, you need to make it your friend. It's really, it kicked my butt. It total surrender. It focused and disciplined me. It take away everything that was extra. It blessed me every moment. I came back from India one time with hepatitis A, which was actually not a big deal, but it is, it really kicks you. But you can't do anything for two or three or months or more. It took me about 6 months to get better. But there's nothing to take, and you just have to rest. I needed to surrender more. What I needed to surrender wasn't the energy, because I'd already surrendered that, or it had been taken. But what I needed to surrender was the ego and thinking that I needed to do something, or that things needed to be a certain way. And so this Saturn period has been a tremendous focus and discipline. This is when the astrology came together. I was not as focused for it. I like to say that the readings come through me. They're not from me, but through me. And when they were from me, then they weren't existing. That wasn't the program. When I dropped that and let it come through me, then the readings have happened. And now I'm booked up 2 months I never had before. It's the first time. So that's really a real blessing and a wonderful opportunity.
I was going to say, when you were talking about Saturn and telling that story, I just thought to myself, my gosh, you know, Saturn does not mess around.
Isn't that beautiful?
For listening to this episode of the podcast. And do remember, there is a special offer for my listeners at the end of the show. Please connect with Indra through his website and let him know you heard about him through this podcast. There will be a link to his website in the episode show notes, as well as his email address, so that you can contact him. I need to thank Indra for being a guest on the show and telling all of his stories. Carl Jung said, "We are born at a given moment, in a given place, and, like vintage years of wine, we have the qualities of the year and of the season of which we are born. Astrology does not lay claim to anything more.
And I really like that image, that just as wine is a product of the wind and the weather, the land in which the grapes grow and ripen, so are we a product of the heavens, the positions of the planets on the day that we were born. It's kind of a lovely thought, and once again, connects us to all that is out there. And I'd rather live in a world where all is connected versus where we are all separate, wouldn't you? Please do remember to rate and review the podcast, and please do subscribe. Thank you for listening, and here's my one request. Be like Indra. Always be searching. Always be looking for diverse and wonderful ways to get to know yourself, because they are out there. And never forget to look up. Look up and gaze at the stars.
And I want to make an offer to you that you can also put in your notes, if you'll allow me, to your audience. And that's two free offers, not just one free offer, but two free offers. The free offers are, if you email me your birth date, time, and place, I will send you your Vedic astrology chart. And it's not a reading. I'll probably make a comment or two, and I will show you a little bit of how to read it. But if you want your chart, I can send that to you. And the other version, the other free offering is a simple Enneagram test in order to find your number, your point. There are 9 Enneagram points. Enneagram, the term Enneagram comes from Greek and it means 9-sided figure. So there are 9 personality types. And so you can you can start with Enneagram by finding out your number. So if you send me, again, if you email me and request either the test or the chart with your time, date, and place, I will send that to you. And if you're interested in following up with what I'm offering, what is being offered, and learning more about me, if you're interested, then the website, indrarinsler.com, is the place to go.